Hello, and welcome to our program, Senior Living, brought to you by AL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I'm Chrissy Mernon. During this next half hour, I'm reading articles from the AARP Bulletin here on AL Radio. And this is under the Your Life category. For nursing homes, pandemic challenges haven't ended. A chronic worker shortage has blocked chances for reform and rebound, by Emily Paulin. The death of roughly one in every eight nursing home residents in the U.S. from the COVID-19 pandemic shocked America and triggered promises for change from health officials at every level. President Joe Biden, in his State of the Union address last year, vowed that federal officials would set higher standards for nursing homes and make sure your loved ones get the care they deserve and expect. But while there are glimmers of hope for a better future, the situation for many of the nearly 1.2 million residents who reside in some 15,000 nursing homes across America is worse than before the pandemic start, according to interviews with dozens of nursing home professionals, workers, and residents. In a nursing home near Dallas, resident Cindy Napolitan, 66, reports call lights going unanswered, diapers not being changed, dinners going cold at the table while residents wait to be fed, and a lack of clean towels to shower with. Late last year, she watched as it took more than 2 hours for nurses to start performing cardiopulmonary resuscitation on her comatose neighbor. She didn't make it, Napolitan says. In her almost 5 years of living in nursing homes, she says, care levels are the worst they've ever been. Nothing has really improved, says Charlene Harrington, a longtime nursing home researcher at the University of California, San Francisco. In fact, in most ways, residents are worse off than they were before the pandemic. The primary reason? A large-scale exodus of workers over the past 3 years has made worse what was already an understaffed situation in many of America's nursing homes. Today, record-high staffing shortages and an unprecedented level of underqualified staff are leaving residents with even less care than before COVID's arrival. Also, the lagging rate of COVID booster shots among nursing home residents is allowing the virus to linger, causing more deaths than necessary and preventing residents from a return to regular programming. A class action lawsuit filed by AARP Foundation lawyers in September against one of the largest for-profit nursing home operators in Illinois, the Alden Group, illustrates the present state of nursing homes, lawyers say. People living in six different facilities claim Alden has intentionally provided insufficient numbers of registered nurses, certified nursing assistants, CNAs, and other workers who provide direct care to residents. The practice has led to neglect, preventable injuries, and illnesses, the lawsuit says. States set minimum staffing standards, but Alden is charged with lying on reports of staffing levels, in some cases falsifying documents while requiring residents to sign illegal agreements, preventing them from suing when injuries occur because of understaffing. I actually think these practices have gotten worse recently after the pandemic, says Kelly Bagby, Vice President of Litigation at AARP Foundation. That's why we're seeking a court order to put an immediate stop to them. Alden did not respond to a request for comment. That's not to say advocates for the nursing home industry and others are out of hope. On the federal level, what the president has proposed is much more significant than anything for decades, maybe, says Eric Carlson, an attorney at the advocacy group Justice in Aging. If there hadn't been a pandemic, would this action be happening at the level it is right now? I don't think so. Plus, there are pockets of positive changes at the state level. New York, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and others recently increased minimum staffing requirements for their nursing homes. Iowa has launched an apprenticeship program enabling high school students to become CNAs before graduation, and Illinois has pledged additional tuition reimbursement for students training in nursing home careers. Ironically, it took the disaster of a pandemic to make such potential positive change possible. Richard Mallett, the executive director of the Long-Term Care Community Coalition, agrees. I think that COVID brought much-needed attention to the nursing home sector, much more than we've seen, he says. I think that it's now part of the dialogue and that people really saw how much needs to be done. I think that is a good thing. We'll see. a shrinking industry. The U.S. nursing home industry has been shrinking for decades, with the nationwide resident population going from 1.6 million in 1997 to 1.3 million in 2019, even as the number of Americans over 80 has surged. Occupancy rates also dropped from 88% to 81% during the same period. Primary reason for the declines, consumers have been increasingly opting for less institutionalized care, either in-home and community-based settings or assisted living facilities. The pandemic appears to have accelerated that decline, slashing the resident population by a further 13% and causing another 8% drop in occupancy rates. Heightened death rates in these facilities are partly to blame, researchers say, alongside the decision by many families to pull loved ones out of nursing homes once they learned of the issues they were facing. That's actually seen as good news by advocates like Harrington. Nursing homes are generally not of sufficient quality, she says. We're seeing the population narrow because people realize it's risky to go into these facilities, and I think that's for the best. Staffing has fallen at a similar pace. Between January 2020 and November 2022, the industry shed about 215,600 jobs, according to data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. That's about 14% of its total workforce, a figure that far outpaces losses in other healthcare sectors. The nursing home sector is probably in the worst situation I've seen in 35 years, says Jackie Nickel, Chief of Senior Living Services at Volunteers of America National Services, a nonprofit operating more than 20 senior living communities throughout the U.S. We've had staffing stresses before, but I had no idea how bad they really could be. The mass exodus has mainly occurred among certified nursing assistants, who many refer to as the backbone of the nursing home workforce. CNAs provide around 90% of direct resident care, lifting, bathing, toileting, dressing, and feeding. In 2020, as COVID-19 cases soared in their workplaces, their job became one of America's most deadly. Poor conditions have been the norm for decades, says Sylvia Abiquie, 48, who worked in U.S. long-term care after emigrating from Ghana more than 20 years ago. COVID-19 was just the last straw, she says. She quit her role as director of nursing at a 120-bed nursing facility in Brookline, Massachusetts, after being hospitalized with the virus following an outbreak in her workplace in April 2020. She hasn't returned to a job in a nursing facility. As workers have fled, the health of residents has deteriorated. Bed sores, weight loss, depression, and the use of antipsychotic medication, conditions commonly associated with low staffing ratios, have all increased during the pandemic, according to an analysis of federal data by the National Consumer Voice for Quality Long-Term Care. COVID-19 deaths among nursing home residents, also exacerbated by low staffing, totaled more than 160,000 as of November, according to the federal government, representing about 15% of all virus deaths nationwide. The nursing home industry is pushing back on the federal proposal to establish mandatory staffing levels, saying it's unachievable and unaffordable under current government funding. We would love to hire more nurses and nurse aides, Mark Parkinson, president and CEO of the American Healthcare Association, a national association of more than 14,000 nursing and assisted living facilities, said in a statement. However, we cannot meet additional staffing requirements when we can't find people to fill the open positions, nor when we don't have the resources to compete against other employers. That's likely true for some providers, given Medicaid's current reimbursement rates. Research shows that these government payments, which 62% of nursing home residents nationwide rely on to fund their stays, don't cover the full cost of care in many states, leaving providers to leverage other sources of payment to offset losses. But the true state of the industry is difficult to discern because many nursing home owners have lacked transparency, advocates say. Roughly 70% of nursing homes in America are for-profit enterprises. Some nursing homes report high profits and others are siphoning profits out into other companies that they own, including management and property companies, says UCSF's Harrington, who investigates nursing home finances. But we have no idea where the money is going because we don't have transparency. Before putting more taxpayer dollars into the system, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which is tasked with rolling out President Biden's nursing home plan, is trying to identify unscrupulous providers pulling money out of care for profits. But it's a slow process, Harrington says. CMS recently started making ownership data publicly available, but it's not accurate or complete yet, she says, and getting it to that stage is going to take a lot of time. Until then, staffing remains sparse, and complaints about residents going unchecked and unfed for hours are mounting, according to Marjorie Moore, the executive director of VOICE, an advocacy group for people living in long-term care. Across the country, the hours of care per day are just way, way, way too low, she says. And that's really scary. Underqualified care. At the beginning of the pandemic, to combat rising staffing shortage, the Trump administration issued nursing homes a blanket waiver, letting them onboard nurse aides who hadn't completed the required training of at least 75 hours within 4 months of employment. Many states adopted a temporary nurse aide program, TNA, allowing workers to be hired after substantially less training, often only 8 hours online. We brought these people in who had no idea what they were doing, Mallett says, just when residents needed high-quality care the most. The Biden administration lifted the blanket waiver in June 2022, citing concern that it had contributed to poor health outcomes for residents. But extended waivers are being granted to states, counties, or facilities that can't access training or testing programs because they're either fully booked or unavailable in that area. It's unknown how many of the industry's roughly 470,000 nurse aides are currently uncertified, but industry observers suggest it's the majority. I guess it's close to 90% than 10%, Attorney Carlson says. Despite this, the industry is lobbying to allow waiver extensions for another 2 years, maybe even permanently, if a study finds them effective in alleviating staffing burdens. Such extensions would prevent further devastating job losses, in turn protecting access to care for our nation's seniors, says Holly Harmon, Senior Vice President of Quality, Regulatory, and Clinical Services at the AHCA-NCAL, in a statement. AARP disagrees and has called for a wide range of job improvements like paid leave, improved training, and increased pay to help retain staff. COVID's constant threat. One area of nursing homes that experts generally agree has seen some improvement over the course of the pandemic is COVID-19 infection prevention and control. The vast majority of the credit, however, goes to one tool in particular, vaccines. They're a miracle, says Carol Silver Elliott, president and CEO of the Jewish Home Family, a nursing home provider in New Jersey. The drop in cases and deaths that vaccines spurred have allowed operators to slowly reintroduce daily routines, which were disrupted during the public health emergency. At the Jewish Home Family, visitation, communal dining, group activities, and excursions have all come back, Elliott says. We're a whole lot more normal than we have been for a few years, so I'm grateful for that. But vaccination is not a one-and-done fix. It's an ongoing process, says R. Tamara Konecka, a professor of public health sciences at the University of Chicago, and we need to keep up for it to work effectively. Recently, though, nursing homes haven't, which leaves this population on shaky ground. As of mid-November, only 45% of nursing home residents and 22% of staff nationwide were up to date on vaccines, according to AARP's Nursing Home COVID-19 dashboard. So while deaths still remain way down from the heights of the pandemic, the virus is continuing to circle through many facilities, killing hundreds of residents nationally per month. It's also preventing a proper return to daily life, says Morgan Katz, MD, an infectious disease expert at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Many of the facilities I work with are on outbreak status on a regular basis, she says, which restricts residents' freedoms and schedules. That's why it is so important to capture the moment created by the pandemic and harness public outrage, health professionals and advocates say, and there are some signs that is happening. What we need is really a lot of political will, Konecka says. There's probably more political will right now than we've seen in decades, so that's good. The next article from AARP Bulletin under Your Health, 7 Things Your Toes Could Reveal About Your Health. Why a little digit detective work by you and your doc could have big benefits, by Beth Howard. You probably don't think of your toes much unless someone steps on them, but your toes and toenails can tell you a lot about your health. The toes and toenails provide clues that there could be something going on that patients might not realize, says Tracy Vlahalik, a clinical professor at the Temple University School of Podiatric Medicine in Philadelphia. Doctors can underestimate the importance of your feet and toes, too. I've had patients go for a skin check, and they're not even told to take off their socks and shoes, says Brian C. Markinson, chief of podiatric medicine and surgery at the Department of Orthopedic Surgery at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York. Step in where those doctors don't. These 7 changes to your toes or toenails could be a sign of disease or other medical issues. Clue: concave toenails. Condition: anemia. Some people are born with concave or spoon nails, but a case that appears out of the blue warrants a check. If your toenails look scooped out with an indentation big enough to hold a drop of water, it's often a sign of anemia, Markinson says. That scooped-out nail could also be pointing to a range of autoimmune disorders or hypothyroidism. Clue: tingling, burning, or numbness. Condition: diabetes. Tingling, numbness, or burning are classic signs of peripheral neuropathy caused by diabetes, Markinson says. High blood sugar injures nerves throughout the body, particularly the extremities. Loss of sensation is a key factor in the development of diabetic foot infections, Markinson says. Clue: dark vertical bands on the toenail or dark spots under the nail. Condition: melanoma. On the foot, melanoma is most likely to develop on the big toe, but it can affect other toes and hide out between the digits, Markinson says. Acral melanoma is the most common type of melanoma among people of color. Fortunately, just 1 to 3% of those pigmented bands are malignant, Markinson says. Clue: half and half or washed out nails. Condition: kidney or liver disease. Nail beds that are partly white and partly red, pink, or brown are called half and half or Lindsay's nails, Vlahalik says. Research suggests that they occur in 20 to 50% of patients with chronic kidney disease. White or pink nails with a band of pink or brown, called Terry's nails, are similar to half and half nails, but we typically see more whiteness and just a couple of millimeters of normal nail bed color, Vlahalik says. The condition is a tip-off to liver diseases such as hepatitis and cirrhosis. Clue: painful, inflamed toe joints. Condition: arthritis. Painful joints could mean rheumatoid arthritis, an autoimmune disease which attacks the joints at the base of the toes, says Stuart D. Kaplan, M.D., chief of rheumatology at Mount Sinai South Nassau in Oceanside, New York. The condition creates painful erosions in the bones of the toe. Osteoarthritis, which is the wear and tear form of arthritis. There's not so much erosion to the joints, but you may often get hammer toes when toes, often the second or third ones, are bent, Kaplan says. Psoriatic arthritis affects the joints at the ends of the toes, distal interphalangeal joints, particularly the third, fourth, or fifth digits, which swell up like little plump sausages, Kaplan says. It's common for lower back or joint pain to accompany this condition. Gout is an arthritic condition caused by excessive uric acid in the blood. When your kidneys don't eliminate uric acid efficiently or your body makes too much of it, gout symptoms can be exacerbated by a protein and alcohol-heavy diet. Clue: clubbed toes. Condition: lung disease. When the tips of the toes enlarge and the toenails become more rounded on the top and curve downward toward the tip, it could be due to low blood oxygen levels, typically brought on by a lung disease or even heart issues, Vlahalik says. Clubbed toes can be inherited, she adds, but in a subset of people, it is acquired. If the tips of your toes seem to be widening or curving, see your doctor. Clue: cold or blue toes. Condition: heart disease. Poor circulation can cause the feet or toes, or both, to become cold, Markinson says. It's typically due to atherosclerosis, a buildup of plaque on the inside of your arteries that blocks blood flow to the extremities. Have your doctor investigate if you are having abnormal or increasing issues with feet temperature. Another cause may be Raynaud's syndrome, a rheumatic condition in which the small blood vessels in the fingers or toes go into spasm, causing them to turn white or blue in the cold. The next article from AARP Bulletin, Your Money. Get extra credit for your taxes. Don't miss out on any givebacks from Uncle Sam or your state. By Beth Braverman. What do electric cars, IRA contributions, and new windows for your home have in common? That's an easy one for a tax accountant. They're all items for which the federal government might give you a tax credit. With the new year underway and the 2022 tax filing season here, it's the perfect moment to pay attention to these offerings, which can shave hundreds or even thousands of dollars off your tax bill and sometimes even get you a refund. Federal and state governments offer tax credits as a way to promote behaviors that they believe will benefit the economy, the environment, or activities the government deems important. Their benefits can be substantial. Tax deductions are good, but tax credits are better, says Mark Stieber, Chief Tax Information Officer at Jackson Hewitt Tax Services, based in Jersey City, New Jersey. Credits are the holy grail of tax benefits. Here's why. Deductions simply reduce the amount of your taxable income, while tax credits are a dollar-for-dollar reduction of your tax bill. For example, if you file jointly and have $60,000 in federal taxable income, a $1,000 tax deduction would lower your tax bill by $120. A $1,000 tax credit, on the other hand, would cut it by a full $1,000. Most tax credits are non-refundable, meaning that you can use them only to reduce the amount of taxes you owe. If you owe $800 in federal taxes and have a $1,000 non-refundable tax credit, you'd reduce your liability to zero, but you wouldn't get any money back. Once a refundable credit zeros out your tax bill, however, money left over becomes a refund. So in this particular case, a $1,000 refundable credit would result in a $200 refund. If you happen to owe no taxes at all, you'd be refunded the full $1,000. Note that some tax credits are only partially refundable. Refundable credits are much more powerful since you don't even need to pay taxes to get money from the government, says Eric Braunenkant, head of tax at investment firm Betterment. Many credits and deductions are getting more valuable for tax year 2023 since the IRS adjusts them for inflation. Keep these credits in mind when you file your taxes both for 2022 and 2023. Earned income. The Earned Income Tax Credit, EITC, is considered one of the government's top anti-poverty programs. Its purpose is to bolster the earnings of low-wage earners and offset some of their taxes. And it's particularly valuable if you claim children or grandchildren as dependents. For tax year 2022, the EITC can go as high as $6,935 for someone with three or more dependent children. Though there is no age limit for receiving the EITC if you have qualifying dependents, people with no dependent children can get the credit up to a maximum of $560 only from the ages of 25 through 64. The size of the credit depends on your income and filing status, too. For 2022, for example, you can't get the credit if you're a single filer with no children and your income exceeds $16,840. For joint filers with three kids, the corresponding figure is $59,187. 30 states also offer an earned income tax credit, typically calculated as a percentage of the federal credit. Many retirees assume they don't qualify for the EITC because they don't collect a paycheck, Stieber says. But if you're working part-time as a consultant or you've turned your hobby into business with net income, those count as earnings, he says. Electric cars. Authorized by last year's Inflation Reduction Act, the new Clean Vehicle Credit can get you a non-refundable credit of up to $7,500 on the purchase of a qualifying new electric vehicle. For a used electric vehicle, the credit is $4,000 or 30% of the sale price, whichever is lower. The new car's price must be less than $80,000 for vans, SUVs, and trucks, and less than $55,000 for other cars. For example, a new $65,000 Tesla Model Y would not qualify, but you could get the maximum credit for the less expensive new Volvo S60. A used car must cost less than $25,000, and its model year must be at least 2 years earlier than the calendar year in which you buy it. Income limitations apply as well. To qualify for the new car credit, individual filers' adjusted gross income must be less than $150,000, and joint filers' income must be less than $300,000. The technicalities about which cars qualify can be overwhelming, but that's something that the manufacturers and dealers can tell the customer, says Annette Nellen, a tax attorney and professor at San Jose State University. You can also check on a specific vehicle by entering its vehicle identification number into the VIN decoder tool on the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration website. Retirement savings. If you're still working and contributing to a retirement plan, such as a 401k or an IRA, you could qualify for the Savers Credit. Depending on your income and tax filing status, the credit is worth 10 to 50% of your contribution to a retirement plan, up to $2,000. $4,000 if married and filing jointly. You may get less if you or your spouse took a retirement distribution during the year. The credit starts to phase out for married couples earning more than $68,000 in 2022 or more than $73,000 in 2023, and individuals earning more than $34,000 in 2022 and $36,500 in 2023. Home improvement. The Inflation Reduction Act extended and expanded tax credits available to homeowners for energy-efficient home improvements. Starting in 2023, you can get an energy-efficient home improvement credit for 30% of improvements, including home energy audits, Energy Star qualified doors and windows, and HVAC upgrades. The credit is worth up to $1,200 per year. Previously, you could get a credit for only 10% of similar cost with a lifetime limit of $500. Separately, the Residential Energy Efficient Property Credit, which was going to expire at the end of 2023, has been extended through 2034. It's worth 30% of the cost of installing energy systems such as geothermal heat pumps, solar energy systems, or battery storage technology. Property taxes. 15 states plus the District of Columbia have circuit breaker tax credits, which kick in if your property taxes exceed a certain percentage of your income. The rules for these credits, some of which apply to renters as well, vary by state, but they can be quite valuable. Not sure whether your state offers one? You can check with your state representative or at the website of the state's Department of Taxation. You have to apply for these credits, but they're particularly useful for older homeowners who might have fixed incomes but rising rents or property taxes, says Amy Hanauer, executive director of the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. They're designed to protect taxpayers from a property tax overload. You have been listening to Senior Living on Al Radio. You can listen to Al Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.alradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 this evening. I'm Chrissy Mernon, saying goodbye from Al Radio.